This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Hello and welcome. How are you today? While it's getting cold in Ukraine as winter approaches, here in New Zealand we can already feel the real warmth of summer. And not just outside, but right here in the studio. Because today we're joined on the phone by Kate Turska, a Ukrainian community leader in New Zealand, chair of the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand North, and co-founder of Mahi for Ukraine. She is one of the key voices helping New Zealanders connect with the reality of Ukraine's struggle for freedom and resilience. Welcome, Kate. Thank you for joining us today. When did you first come to New Zealand and what made you choose this country?
Well, I come from Slavansk in Donetsk region, and I finished my first university there. I studied linguistics, and I speak a number of languages, one of them being Mandarin. So I went to China straight after university to study a Mandarin in China. And when I went to China, I met a number of Kiwis in China. So it was a very small expat community. And in the town where we lived, where my university was, we all knew each other. So we had maybe 8 Kiwis at the time, and we were all friends. I actually started dating one of them, and he brought me to New Zealand. So I guess I didn't choose it. It chose me, as it were. And that was back in 2005.
Ah, it's really long ago.
Yes, it is. In fact, I can't believe it's been almost 20 years. Not quite, but very soon coming up 20 years. And I feel like part of the furniture now.
Cool. What do you do in New Zealand?
Well, currently I work in IT, but I've had a long career in professional services, IT, technology, etc., working in sales, governance, leadership. At the moment, I manage partner relationships and with different vendors for SPAC New Zealand.
How do you stay connected to Ukrainian culture in your everyday life here? So let's talk first about the time before the full-scale invasion. How did you stay connected to Ukrainian culture, to Ukrainians?
Right. Well, I first arrived in New Zealand, of course. I had my Kiwi partner and his family and his friends, and really didn't know anyone from Ukraine at all in New Zealand. So in my first couple of years, I actually started looking for Ukrainians. This was one of the first things that I did. I Googled. And the first person that I actually found was Natalia Pashvala-Tawla, who is now Vice President of Ukrainian World Congress for Asia Pacific. She now lives in Melbourne, but she used to live in Auckland. And I found her online. She had her own business, and I reached out. And I guess a long story short, in 2007, the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand was reincorporated, and I was there at the start, at the roots, so to say. And there was a group of Ukrainians of us that we kind of all got together, were very active at the time, organized events, community events. And that was my window to the Ukrainian culture, joining the community at that time as well. I also taught a Ukrainian Sunday school, so we taught Ukrainian language to New Zealand children of Ukrainian descent and also to adults who wanted to learn. And throughout first of those years with the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand, I made more Ukrainian friends and connections, stay connected, obviously, within the community. We made sure that we kept up traditions. We ran some Pisanka workshops for Easter, and we celebrated holidays. But then I guess things subsided and life sort of taking on different speed and careers, etc. So it wasn't necessarily as active. But with the full-scale invasion, me taking up a community role and becoming a bit more of a significant advocate for Ukraine, I reintegrated with the community once more and made so many more connections from the Ukrainian community here in New Zealand. But then, of course, with the implementation of Ukraine special visa, I was able to bring my parents from Ukraine to New Zealand as well in 2022. And alongside them, a few hundred of other Ukrainians, displaced Ukrainians came. And so I think our community is really blooming and blossoming now. It's still a very small community, but we ensure that we stay connected to the culture. We run traditional events. And of course, having my parents here have changed everything. They cook Ukrainian food. They still maintain all the traditions and holidays. And it's like a new fresh air for me. in that sense, because my mom just makes all the things that I've forgotten. I haven't been necessarily keeping up with, say, the cuisine. And my mom makes borscht, and my mom makes vareniki, and all sorts of things. So well and truly staying connected and supporting Ukraine, I guess, because in the end of the day, other than obviously our own personal preferences and friendships and socializing, staying connected to Ukrainian culture and tradition, speaking Ukrainian language is very important, because all of that is acts of defiance. What Russia is doing right now is trying to erase us as a nation and trying to erase Ukrainian culture and trying to erase Ukrainian identity, and we refuse to be erased. So I think the community here is realizing it more and more, and we're starting to, you know, speak louder and use our voices and come into these spaces and really state that we are Ukrainian and we are here and we want to remain being Ukrainian, speak our language, sing our songs, maintain our traditions, wear our vashivankas. In fact, I've actually tattooed a vashivanka as well on my wrist as a reminder that I am Ukrainian and nobody can tell me otherwise.
You told me about your parents. Do they live with you? And how do they cope with different mentalities? Because I know that for some Ukrainians, it's quite hard to be in New Zealand because of differences.
Well, so my parents, they live very close by, a 5-minute walking distance. And it is very hard, of course, at that age when you come to a new country. In general, when people of that age move countries, even if they speak the language, it's going to be much harder than it is for younger generations. And of course, within their case, they don't speak the language and they've lived their whole life in Ukraine. And at the same time, they're also coming from trauma. Not only they come from Donbass, and so they've already been in this war since 2014 and they've already lived a number of very, very hard years. And then with the big scale invasion and everything that that brought, they have quite a lot of mental stress as well as trauma, as well as their physical health isn't necessarily the best. And so that kind of makes their adoption a little slower and a little harder for them. The mentality side of things, yes, is different and the culture is different. So of course, that's going to be noticeable, but that's the case for anybody moving countries. In their case, you know, they've lost their community, they've lost their sense of belonging. They did not make this choice. A lot of the time when people move countries, again, it's something they prepare for a significant period of time. And it is something that they are ready for. And this is a step that they make and choose to make. Whereas in this case, they were forced to abandon their home, to abandon their community, to leave everything behind. So as much as, of course, they appreciate and love being here in New Zealand and being safe, and they love being next to me, they've lived more than 20 years away from me. But at the same time, it is very hard on them. They find it very hard to adopt with the language barrier and the cultural barrier. But as a community, we obviously try and support, organize events that people can socialize and, you know, introducing them to other people. It is harder on the elderly. I think young people are a little more flexible in that sense, that they kind of adopt quicker, make new acquaintances, friends, etc. So, I mean, it's definitely got its own challenges.
Do they intend to stay here in New Zealand or they want to come back to Ukraine?
Well, if it's up to me, then they're definitely going to stay. But if you listen to them, they quite often speak of returning. The reality being, of course, Donbass and the area where I come from, the area where they live, their house, is not going necessarily to be fit for living for a while. And it's not like, you know, younger people returning is great because younger people can contribute and can be of value in Ukraine and, you know, can develop and grow, versus elderly people with health conditions, numerous other things, they're more of a burden on the state, and the state especially that's currently a challenge, you know, going through all these challenges. And even if the peaceful time was to come, it would take a while before those currently pre-frontline towns will actually have life returning and will have all the resources that all these older people require, because at the end of the day, it's not like they can contribute a lot when it comes to rebuild or anything else. So the sensible thing for them at that age would be to stay here in New Zealand, and I really hope that that happens, but of course it's going to be up to them in the end of the day. And like I said, they do mention it quite often.
Do you know how many people came to New Zealand after the full-scale invasion and how many people went back to Ukraine? Because, for example, I know that a lot of people like our parents' age, they came back to Ukraine. They were not able to stay here because all their friends are in Ukraine and everything they had is in Ukraine. Do you know these statistics?
Yes, so I don't necessarily have the exact statistics purely because it differs at a different point in time. We had very fluctuating sort of numbers where people were coming, going again, depending on different things. So we had a first wave of newcomers and there was a few hundred people. Then we had another wave when the changes to the Ukraine special visa were made next year when the criteria was slightly widened. Then some people left, but then the pathway to residency was announced and more people came. So all in all, we've had around 1,000 people at any given point that have come on the Ukraine special visa. I think it was 800 at the peak or some such to that effect. And at the lowest, at one point, we had only around 300 people. As of now, it's more than 400, but I don't have the latest exact statistics. So with people that have come and gone sort of thing, as of now, there's at least 400 plus Ukrainians who have come and currently have received the Ukraine resident visa.
Okay, let's talk about your community work. So I want to congratulate you because you were elected one more time for one more year to be the head of the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand, North Regions. And you're also a leader of Mahi for Ukraine.
Thank you.
What inspired you to take on these responsibilities?
I guess it's not about inspiration as such. It's something that I felt I had to do as a Ukrainian abroad, as a Ukrainian with a voice, with a platform. As I mentioned earlier, I did engage in the Ukrainian community work early on in early 2000s, and I was part of the Ukrainian community. I was serving on the committee of the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand a while back, as well as I taught Ukrainian language in the Sunday school. So when the full-scale invasion started, I went back to my connections within the community and I asked what help was needed. I know in New Zealand, we have a number of Ukrainian organizations and communities, but we don't really have a one sort of governing body or an organization that sort of umbrella that speaks for the whole community of New Zealand. And when something big like this happens and there's need for advocacy, there's a requirement to have a one voice and a representation. So initially, Mahi for Ukraine was, the idea behind it was being a task force for the Ukrainian communities. So we had representation from different communities and regional organizations, and then we spoke, discussed, and agreed our action plan and the type of advocacy we wanted to do. And then we spoke on behalf of those organizations with the government. And that's how it started as a task force. And it was meant to be, it was never meant to be a thing of its own. It was meant to be just the work that we all do as Ukrainians. And then it grew into a thing of its own. So with Mahi for Ukraine, obviously, we have continued to do advocacy for a while there. And when the time came with the Ukrainian Association of New Zealand's previous chair wanting to step down, he suggested that I would become a chair, and I was elected last year. So for me, I mean, I guess it wasn't something that I needed inspiration or motivation for. For me personally, it's a personal choice. I don't need to be inspired to do the work for Ukraine because I absolutely believe that every single one of us abroad who has the privilege to be here, like I said, who has the privilege of having a voice, we absolutely should use that voice to support Ukraine and to do everything we can to use our skills, whatever skills each of us has. And, you know, some of us may be good at certain things, not other things, and that's fine. But as long as we contribute in any possible way, I think that we can't lose. We are a very small community here as well, and we need to make sure that we amplify our voices. So for me, obviously wanting to bring my parents to New Zealand was a great motivator, but I did not necessarily need a motivation or inspiration to support my country, because I truly deeply believe that us Ukrainians, all of us Ukrainians around the world, not just those in Ukraine, we have to fight this fight.
What do you think? What are the main tasks for Ukrainians in New Zealand, for Ukrainian organizations now? It's a bit different when it's peaceful times and when it's wartime. So we cannot just organize the cultural events and introduce our culture to New Zealanders, but we need to do something different. What do you think Ukrainians need to do?
Yes, definitely. It's different. Wartime is, of course, different. But I still do believe there's room for everything that you mentioned. There's definitely still room for our culture to be brought into the communities. But awareness is a huge thing, because in the end of the day, Ukraine is a massive gap when it comes to people's awareness about anything to do with Ukraine, not just the current situation, but a lot of that, what's happening right now in Ukraine is rooted in history. And, you know, Russian oppression has been ongoing for centuries. We've always heard the Russian side of the story because Russian propaganda machine has been working for centuries. and has been working for decades, you know, since the Soviet times, to ensure that countries like Ukraine did not have a place on the world stage when it comes to understanding our culture, our history with Russia, the fact that we were colonized and oppressed. And then Russian culture is dominant always, and Russian language is dominant, and everything Russian take on history is dominant. It is important for us to not only bring that awareness around the current events and, of course, around the war and rallying support for Ukraine and advocating and ensuring that, but it's also important for us to keep those cultural ties and to present our culture and our history in its full range to Kiwis for them to understand where we're coming from and who we are, because we're more alike than people would think. And there's so many different things and myths about Ukraine that are currently misunderstood and misrepresented, of course, by Russian propaganda machines. So for us as a community, everything that we've been doing up until the war started, we absolutely should continue doing as well. And then, of course, on top of that, we should all be mindful of that awareness piece for what's happening right now. We should be mindful of the rallying support for Ukraine and reminding everyone that the war is not over, because war fatigue is a real thing. And of course, it's almost 4 years the full-scale invasion has been going, and over 11 years since the start of this Russian aggression. So people will just, I get asked all the time whether or not the war is still on. Sometimes people forget. We might not be on the news for a couple of months, or there's nothing significant happening in terms of any kind of peacemaking efforts, and people forget and people turn their eyes away and consider other things. But what happens in Ukraine, and it's not just about Ukraine, is absolutely not. It shapes global community, it shapes the new world order, because it has a huge geopolitical impact on the whole world, and not just geopolitical. It has a huge impact on quite a lot of things, in fact, on economies and a number of other things. So here in New Zealand, we absolutely are feeling the effects of the war, and it definitely is not something that should be forgotten or disregarded as something that has nothing to do with us.
You almost answered my next question I wanted to ask you, but I will ask, because as you said, people already tired of war started to get used to that it is war in Ukraine and they don't want to help anymore. What are the biggest challenges in mobilizing people or resources for Ukraine now?
It is exactly that. It's war fatigue and also competing priorities. Of course, there's a number of other things happening within our own communities here in New Zealand, our own political landscape, but then also around the world. And so we have to bear in mind, with everything else that's going on, we live in an interconnected world, but we also have to bear in mind that not all wars shape the global order and have the global effects, but the one in Ukraine 100% absolutely does. And a big challenge is also that awareness piece is actually the gaps in people's understanding, because you know how empathy works. If you don't know about something, you're not walking around and feeling empathetic for everything that's going on that's wrong with this world. We know that there's a lot of problems and challenges in many countries, but unless we're aware of them, we are not going to necessarily feel empathy and then feel moved to do something about it. And so what bridges that gap is awareness, is hearing our stories, is understanding what is actually happening and how it's happening. And with that understanding comes empathy, and with empathy comes action. And unless we do that, and you know, and we have to do that in conjunction with other things, with our advocacy efforts, with our fundraising efforts, but the awareness and closing those gaps and making people understand what it means, obviously, not only what's happening in Ukraine on the ground, but also what it means for the rest of the democratic world, for the rest of the free world, for New Zealand here. And because we have a very small community, it's raising those voices, it can be quite challenging. Obviously, larger communities or any kind of other issues that have quite a lot of support, they tend to be amplified by many more people versus Ukrainian voices, not necessarily so. And that's why the work you do is so important, because you're, you know, one of not many channels that we have that we can come and talk, come into people's homes and actually talk to them about Ukraine and closing some of these knowledge gaps and awareness gaps and historical and cultural and on so many different levels. And that's really important as well, because without awareness, people are not moved to act, unfortunately.
What can ordinary Kiwis do to help or show solidarity?
Oh, there's quite a lot that Kiwis can do. I mean, obviously, in most large cities, there'll be organizations that are likely organizing events. So showing up to those events, staying plugged in, sharing reputable sources and information about what's happening, and, you know, and not making sure that not just the Russian propaganda gets amplified, but the actual stories. And if, you know, people struggling to find those resources, of course, organizations like Ukrainian Association of New Zealand, Mahi for Ukraine, and a number of other organizations around New Zealand can actually be some of those resources where they can find information and other channels. Kiwis can write to their MPs and request support for Ukraine and request that the government does continue. So obviously the government has been, and we're very grateful for that, standing with Ukraine. We have bipartisan support for Ukraine across the board, but you know, there's always more that can be done. So Kiwis could use their voices as well, use their own voices and or amplify Ukrainian voices in the digital space, but also showing up in those Ukrainian spaces and events that our communities hold. Again, there are a number of fundraisers that are happening, and not only locally, our individual communities have a number of initiatives, but also globally. And we as community, we share those. There's a number of different fundraisers. We have the project between all Ukrainian associations in New Zealand for humanitarian aid containers that we sent. We've sent 9 already, and we're preparing 10th one now. And so we're constantly fundraising towards that. There is, like I said, local little initiatives and events, bake sales. There are other various organizations, and we have a list, you know, we can always share. That's another thing. People can come to us, and if they wanted to support monetarily, they absolutely can. And it doesn't have to be huge. You know, every little donation counts. And they could refute Russian propaganda. So from staying connected to turning up to events, to amplifying our, to using your voice, but also amplifying our voices, to making that decision to engage with your local MPs and let them know that we want Ukraine to be supported in whatever way, shape or form, to then potentially making donations. Those are all the things that ordinary Kiwis can do. And then lending a helping hand, you know, there are a number of Ukrainians who have arrived since the full-scale invasion, and a lot of them are struggling with finding employment, etc. You know, maybe there's language barriers, maybe there's something else. And so, you know, we've seen ordinary Kiwis supporting people into employment, helping them with their own businesses, or, you know, if you have a place, considering one of those Ukrainians, because language barrier aside, they are diligent workers. A lot of them have a lot of experience, and they're really keen to help. So there are other ways how they can help. And then, of course, you already have Ukrainians near you in your communities and at your workplaces. And just being mindful and aware, Ukrainians might have some mental health challenges at the moment. Keeping that in mind, you know, being kind, and Kiwis always are, and welcoming and understanding where these people come from is huge. And then if you are a business, for example, or a business owner, or you're in a position of leadership, you can also consider your corporate responsibility piece. Or, you know, even if you're a small business, consider how as a business you can act for good. Stop any dealings with Russia or Russian relating any kind of organizations that relate to Russia or have dealings with Russia, because that in effect funds the Russian war machine. And businesses can make statements and show their solidarity. Again, it doesn't always have to be monetary support. There's that option, of course, but they could support their Ukrainian employees. They could hire other Ukrainians from the new arrivals. So much to do. And of course, if people are lost and unsure how they can help, they can always come to us. And us as a community organization, many of us, yourself included, and other organizations across the country, regional community groups, they will always be happy to share some ideas and resources.
Thank you, Kate, for finding the time to talk with me today. As you said, many people are feeling war fatigue, but we can all help Ukraine in our own way by doing what we do best. Please don't stay indifferent. Support Ukraine. Remind others that the biggest war in Europe since World War II is still ongoing. Before we finish, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the people of Otago and Canterbury and entire New Zealand who have been collecting supplies and offering financial support to send a container to Ukraine. I also want to thank everyone who comes to support Ukraine every Saturday at noon in the Octagon in Dunedin and in other cities of New Zealand. Please join us. Come along if you'd like to ask questions, learn more, meet our small community, or simply show solidarity with Ukrainians. And wherever you are, look for Ukrainian communities in your city and don't hesitate to support them. Because help is not only about money, It can be advice, awareness, kindness, or even not spreading Russian propaganda. Sometimes the most powerful act of support is just to come and say, "Hello, how are you?" In Ukrainian, "Vitaю, як справи?" Caring is also helping. Take care of yourselves, and we will talk again next time on Borscht Club. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.